Welcome to the deep dive. Today we are jumping into something pretty surprising. We're looking at technology through the lens of a group we often just label as behind the Amish.
Yeah, and we're here to completely flip that script. We usually think of tech users as early adopters or laggards, and the Amish always get put in that laggard box.
Or even technophobes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the sources we've dug into, they suggest something. Well, something much more sophisticated. They might actually be the most strategic technology adopters in America.
That's a huge claim. And it's the paradox we're going to unpack for you. This
I
isn't
know.
about just rejecting things. It's about a deep, methodical, value-driven process that can take
I'm calling
decades.
it the 50-year test cycle.
And our mission here is to kind of extract that wisdom and see how we can apply it to the big one right now, AI.
I mean, if you're trying to really understand disruption, this is a shortcut. The Amish, they don't read tech company case studies. They treat us mainstream society as their own massive free focus group.
So while we're beta testing everything,
They're just watching. They're collecting data on what technology actually does to people, and then they decide. It's strategic patience in its purest form.
okay, to show how methodical this is, let's start with a really specific detail because it's not like they're totally unaware of modern tech.
Oh, not at all. They know all about smartphones and the internet.
Right?
What they prohibit is the intrusion of those things into their community.
Yeah.
And that leads to this kind of amazing solution they built, the phone shanty.
A phone shanty. I mean, it sounds so old-fashioned, but the idea behind it is incredibly modern.
It is the ultimate value-driven compromise. So let's say a cabinet maker in the community needs a phone for his business, to take orders, coordinate with drivers.
Right, for practical reasons.
He might be allowed to have one, but, and this is the key, that phone cannot be in the house. It has to be kept in a little shed, a separate building sometimes, like 300 meters away.
Wait, 300 meters? Why so specific? Why not just, in the barn next door?
It's all about friction. It's about making it inconvenient to protect what's important. If the phone's in your pocket, it's always there. It buzzes during dinner, you check it before bed.
It's always a temptation.
But if you have to physically get up, put your boots on, and walk 300 meters into the cold to answer it, that call better be important.
That walk is the boundary. That's the strategy. It allows the tool for utility, but it forbids it from interrupting family life.
Exactly. They're drawing a line. And it all comes back to this one single question they ask about any new technology. It's a question we almost never ask.
Which
What
is?
does this do to how we relate to each other?
Okay, so that question drives their whole method. It's why people get it so wrong. They're not rejecting tech.
No, they're just highly intentional. They're what I'd call techno-skeptics. Their process is slow because they're looking for those second-order effects, the consequences that only show up years later.
And that's exactly where our mainstream approach just completely falls apart, isn't it? We adopt for the promised benefit, speed, convenience, whatever, and then we spend the next 10 years trying to clean up the mess.
The mental health crisis, the attention spans, all of it.
Yeah.
Being behind for them
Yeah.
actually means gaining clarity. They get to see what a technology actually does, not what the marketing brochure promises it'll do.
Yeah.
They run a slow-motion controlled experiment.
Where the early adopters are the test group.
And the rest of the community is the control group. And the observation period isn't a fiscal quarter, it's years.
Okay, the most powerful example of this has to be the smartphone and social media
Oh,
crisis.
it's the perfect case study. It proves the model completely.
So walk us through that timeline.
Okay, so widespread smartphone adoption in the US, that's roughly 2007 to 2012. The iPhone launches, Android takes off.
Right, and we all loved it. We celebrated the connection.
Of course. But the Amish, they held back. They watched. And they started collecting their data points.
And what were they seeing?
They were seeing the second-order effects creep in. So by around 2012, 2015, research starts coming out about sleep disruption, rising anxiety in teens, a big shift away from kids hanging out in person to just interacting online. Those were the early warning signs.
Signs that I think a lot of us saw but maybe didn't want to admit were that serious.
Exactly. But then between 2015 and 2018, the data just becomes undeniable. Teen depression rates double. Suicide rates for teenage girls shoot up by 56%.
A staggering number.
It was a systemic crisis. And that's when the Amish communities acted, armed with years of our data.
They held
They
votes.
held votes, and they made it part of their rules, their ordinum.
Yeah.
No smartphones for members under 25. They didn't have to guess. They just waited and watched it happen to us. They literally sidestepped the entire catastrophe.
Okay, but waiting for decades isn't something most of us can do. So let's break down the actual mechanism. You said there are four steps.
Yeah, and the structure is what makes it so useful, even we have to compress the timeline. Step one is the early adopters test. This is super controlled. It's usually someone whose job requires the tool.
So it's not random, it's a specific monitored experiment.
Correct. Then, after a while, maybe a few years, comes step two. Community discussion. The bishop leads this. And they don't talk about specs or features.
What did they talk about?
They ask, what did this actually do to the person using it? Did it make them prideful? Did it pull them away from their family? It's all about behavior and relationships.
It's like a communal impact assessment.
Which leads right into step three, the collective decision. It's a vote. The whole congregation decides based on the evidence they've all seen.
And what's the last step?
Step four is my favorite, modification. Or you could call it Amish hacking. If they do adopt a technology, they almost always change it to fit their values.
Right, like the phone shanty.
Or solar panels. They'll use them for power, but they won't connect to the grid because that creates dependency. They hack the tech to serve their values, not the other way around.
Let's use the car example here because it shows just how deep this goes. Their core question is always, what does this do to how we relate?
And the horse and buggy isn't just a quaint tradition, it's a social design tool.
It defines the size of your world. You know, you can only travel about 20 miles round trip in a day. That forces you to live close to your church, your family, your neighbors.
It creates density. And that density means you have to work through your problems. You can't just drive 50 miles to a different town if you get into an argument with your neighbor.
You're stuck together, so you have to make it work.
But then you introduce the car. And what happens?
Your community becomes wherever you feel like driving.
It spreads everyone out. It weakens those local bonds. It makes it easy to avoid hard relationships instead of fixing them.
So a car, which we see as just, you know, freedom and efficiency, they see as a tool for social fragmentation.
It is never neutral. It is actively reshaping your society. They care about the sociological cost of convenience.
Okay, so let's bring this right to today, the mad rush to adopt AI. ChatGPT launches in late 2022, and it's just been a frenzy ever since. If the Amish were watching us right now, what data would they be collecting?
They wouldn't care about productivity gains at all. They'd be documenting all the subtle degradations.
So what are the early signs, the data points they'd be noting down right now?
Number one would be skill atrophy.
Right.
Sure. People forgetting how to structure an argument or write a simple, coherent email without an AI prompt.
The dependency.
The dependency on a system you don't control. Number two would be the loss of craft satisfaction. You hear it already from writers and programmers. They say, I used to enjoy the process, but now that AI can do it in a second, it feels hollow.
The pride in your own work starts to erode.
And then there's the anxiety, right? The fear of being replaced, the inability to tell what's real from what's generated. It's a collapse of trust.
So the challenge for us is we can't wait 50 years. We can't even really wait 5 years.
You can't, but you don't need 50 years to see these things. You just need enough patience to see what actually happens versus what's promised.
Then I have to push back a little. If my entire industry is moving at lightning speed, how is waiting 3 years not just professional suicide? Aren't I just gonna be left behind?
That's a totally fair question. And it gets to the biggest barrier for us trying to use this method. It's a prerequisite. The Amish system works because they have a rock-solid shared set of values.
Family, community, skilled work, things that don't change.
Exactly. Meanwhile, what are most of us optimizing for? Productivity, income, status. These are constantly shifting targets set by the market.
So without clear values, you can't evaluate anything. You just adopt whatever seems to give you an edge and hope for the best.
You have no standard to measure it against. So if we can't wait, we have to jump straight to their step four, modification. We have to do our own Amish hacking of AI.
We have to build our own boundaries, our own personal AI phone shanties.
Yes. What would that actually look like for you? If you value, say, deep creative thinking, what rules do you set to stop AI from making that skill rust?
So maybe you forbid AI during the brainstorming phase of a project. That's for human creativity only. But you allow it for the grunt work like summarizing research or editing for typos.
Exactly. You use it as a tool, an assistant, but you forbid it from touching the core craft. You draw your line. The utility is allowed, the intrusion is forbidden.
But to do that, you have to know what you're trying to protect in the first place.
You have to identify the three to five things in your work and life that are non-negotiable, and then build the walls around them.
The big takeaway here really is that clarity of purpose, because right now, you, the listener, you are an unpaid beta tester. That's your role.
The Amish goal isn't to win the market. It's to maintain the community. Our society chose speed over wisdom, and now we're all living with the consequences.
And their method relies on community agreement. Most of us are just individuals, trying to keep our heads above water. Maybe to use their wisdom, we first have to build the communities that can actually support it.
I think that's the fundamental difference. We're all watching AI and asking, how do I personally survive this?
Mm-hmm.
They'd be watching and asking, how do we collectively decide what's too valuable to trade for efficiency?
Survival versus preservation. That's the idea that should stick with you. And it leaves us with the core question you should be thinking about this week. Ask yourself, what does AI do to how you relate?
Not to your productivity.
Yeah.
Not to your income.
Yeah.
Your relationship.
Your family, your colleagues, even your relationship with your own skills. So try to identify 3 to 5 things you're actively trying to protect. And then go build your own phone shanty around them.